Hey guys, welcome to Coffee Talk. Father Brad here, and I have a friend of mine, a Blair Piros, but you go by a different name with your art. What is that?
That's right. So I go by Blair Barlow Art. Barlow's my middle name, and I was actually using it before I got married for my very amateur art. And then I figured it's just a good way to continue with the name. After that way, it's not confusing, you know, Blair Gordy versus Blair Piros after.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't do the actual right pronunciation. Piros.
Yeah. So when we were in Italy, everyone pronounced it like that, but we have to Americanize our name here. So. Mm.
Oh, we do. Hey, by the way, we kind of got ahead of ourselves. Everyone's like, wait, Italy? Yeah. Wait, oh, yeah. What is going on? Okay, Blair, first and foremost, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do? Why are you on the Coffee Talks?
So I am an artist. I was born and raised in Louisiana, in St. Francisville. And then I went to school in Baton Rouge at St. Joseph Academy.
A red sticker.
But I was a red sticker, whatever that is.
It's Baton Rouge, right? A red stick.
Yeah, right. So then after college, I went to Franciscan. I guess I should put that in too. I went to Franciscan and just got a humanities degree. I studied humanities and Catholic culture. Mm-hmm. And then I was always into art, and I wanted to pursue it more seriously and get some good training. So after hearing about the Sacred Art School my junior year and doing more research about it and getting roped in with its mission to train artists in the Catholic tradition and be rooted in theology of the body, I knew that's where I wanted to be. And so... I was also seriously dating someone in college, so we decided to go together. We got married 5 months after graduation and 4 days after our wedding flew to Florence.
So did you elope to Italy? Is that what happened?
No. We did actually talk about eloping, probably.
I tell people to elope all the time. You just bring me with you. Like if you want to go to the Bahamas. Right. Well, look, I'm sure there's awesome Catholic chapels in the Bahamas. Bring me along. We'll get two witnesses there. It'll be fine.
Yeah. You know, if we had had a bit smaller of a family who didn't mind not being involved, then we probably would have. But it's really, you know, to include everyone.
I know. I'm just messing.
But we definitely had a great time. But in Italy, it kind of was a two-year.
It was like one... You had just gotten married, and then you were in Italy.
Yeah,
have a house at some point?
No, we didn't. So we had lined something up, and it fell through like 2 weeks before we left. So in true like Italian fashion, were just so casual about letting us know that they were going to renovate, and they couldn't rent to us. And that was after really searching, because it was hard to do business over the internet with Italians over there while we were looking for housing. So we just got an Airbnb for 10 days. We flew there 4 days after our wedding, and we just searched frantically for an apartment. And on like the second to last day, we found a tiny little studio. And we didn't really have an option. We did like it, but good thing, because we were kind of out of time. But
it was it. You gave it up to the Lord. Well, so you mentioned the Sacred Art School, and I think Sacred Art's in the title of the school. And mm-hmm. What, you know, as a Catholic artist, what would be the distinction between Sacred Art and other types of art? Like, why the moniker Sacred? What does that mean? How is it set apart?
Yeah. So I think there's different ways you could distinguish it from secular art. Secular art mainly deals just with the temporal. A lot of times it's really for decoration, or it might dive into the human experience, but its goal is kind of stays there at the human level. I think sacred art, a lot of it is the function of what it's for. So I would say it's a special type of art meant to inspire a sense of the transcendence and to draw us closer to God. In the context of the liturgy, it's also to help give us visual aids to prayer, to help us enter into the mystery of the Mass, and also to help us contemplate salvation history. So I think there's certain characteristics that set it apart from secular art. Should definitely inspire a sense of the transcendence while also being readable, something that the general public can understand, but not being only that. It must also cause us to wonder and to draw us closer to beauty itself. So I think beauty is a key component within sacred art as well. And I recently, while I was kind of reading and preparing for this, came across a definition of it that I thought was really succinct. And it said that beauty is the splendor of truth. And in splendor, it said it's like it makes truth visible. It gives light to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's different components of beauty as well, but...
What you just said is it kind of is reminiscent of scripture. You know, scripture, Augustine says, is shallow enough for a child to play in, but deep enough for an elephant to swim in. And sacred art should be similar, right? It should be able to be discerned and understood and draw the child in, and yet not totally comprehended. It's the mystery of God, right? It's the mysteries of our faith, the mysteries of the sacrament, of the Trinity. And that's really cool. I like that. I like that definition.
Yeah. And I think it also, if we look to Urs von Balthasar, who writes so much about beauty, and definitely all his writing really resonates with me, because he writes about how it's the widest of the three transcendentals that people like more readily enter into when they encounter God. And I think it's kind of the first step for those who are searching for God. The first, usually I think it's, or maybe it's the most easily to pass through when they're encountering who God is and what all of it is about.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the last frontier of evangelization. Some people have said, because it's so hard to argue against, because it's so immediate and it cuts to the heart. There's, you know, people who deny objective truth, objective goodness, right? They deny objective morality. So truth and goodness, two transcendentals, they kind of throw those out. But for some, there was a professor at the seminary. She was adjunct. So I think she was at Southeastern, and she'd come and teach us church art history, right? Or just art history in general. And she was hilarious. She smelled like baby powder. I don't know why I remember that. This is this old lady who would smell like baby powder. She'd show up and she had all these crazy ideas, but she would say, she was, I think, Jewish by heritage, atheist by faith, kind of like rejected faith in general. But she always would talk about going into these churches and starting to cry, and she didn't know why. And we're always like, we know why.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, that's what you're talking about. It's like immediate. She couldn't argue herself out of it. She couldn't be hurt out of it. It's just, man, it takes you over.
Yeah. And I think that's the role. That's the goal and role of sacred art, is just to inspire a sense of wonder and to lift us up toward God. I think there's so many different types of sacred artists also when it comes to, you know, making the whole of the church, the architecture, and the figurative artists such as sculptors and painters. All of that comes together, glass workers, craftsmen that make the metal pieces, the different sacred vessels or the processional cross or things like that. And then there's the aspect of sacred music. So I think what I do is, like said, it is a part of bringing all of those things together into the whole of the church. But
You know, you think there's a distinction between religious art and sacred art, you know, sacred meaning that art that is connected to some sort of ritual, some sort of liturgical thing. And then like, really, I think similarly with music, because you brought up music and it made me think of that. You know, there's religious music, right? I might write a Christian song. I might, you know, Ben Rector has religious music, but we're not playing Ben Rector in mass, right? right. So there's sacred music, and there's music that has religious themes, and even music that's secular that's beautiful, and we can experience God, but it's not fit for the liturgy. And I think they're similar with art, right? There's some that are fit for the liturgy, and that's particularly what you've focused on, I think, from what I've seen. And you've done other stuff too, though, right?
Yeah. Like what's behind me would just be a more secular piece, but I very rarely.
You mean wait? Like I was going to ask for you to do like a Reredos with flamingos in it. You're not going to. You're not cool with that.
Okay. If it would just be in someone's house, but maybe the same format.
Okay, fine. You're a woman.
You could have like
principles.
A peacock. For the resurrection or the pelican.
Hey, we need to, you know, the pelican. Yeah, we need to, but it's enculturation, you know, flamingos speak to me and I'm just messing. I don't mean to. Okay. Yeah. Here's, you mentioned Blair. You mentioned some things earlier and then we kind of blew by them, but I want to go back to it because it has to do with that particular school and the particular ethos in which you studied art and that I've seen in your art. And that's, you mentioned that there was a connection to the theology of the body in art, particularly sacred art. So what is your idea of the connection between sacred art and the theology of the body?
So as I was kind of thinking about this more and trying to simplify it, I think theology of the body incorporated in sacred art is understood as the use of showing man to himself, but showing him and how he was created to be and what the meaning of his body is. So theology of the body was such a beautiful piece of writing that really helped us to understand ourselves better in the form of writing. But I think art is visual theology. And so done well, if we really understand theology of the body and put that into art, it's just going to help explain to man deeper realities about who he is and why he was created. And I think as Christians, Christ is the image of God. And as an artist, that's always what you look to understand why we can make art, why we can make figurative art and images of Christ, because God first became man in Christ. And so we always look to Christ to understand what is the perfect man, what is the perfect unity of body and soul, working in harmony without the result of the fall. Mm. Because I think in art also you can show the brokenness and the effects of the fall within sacred art as part of the theology of the body. But it's always seeking to show that wholeness and to remind man what can be redeemed and who he is created to be in union with others, with the goal of heaven and with the example of Christ.
Yeah, what you just said kind of drew to mind the renovation of the Sistine Chapel that John Paul II did, in which he restored Michelangelo's original paintings that were kind of changed, not kind of changed, they were changed and some things were added, namely covering of the body, covering of parts of the body that are intimate. But he christened it in his homily whenever he opened it back up. He said mass and he consecrated the Sistine Chapel and the paintings again. He said that this is the temple of the theology of the body. And he removed the fig leaves, if you will. It's because those fig leaves were put after the fall. And he's saying like, hey, this art is showing us the original intent of the body, the ordered intent. And with so much depravity in the world, we need something that is good, that doesn't reject the body, and that understands its actual intent. And that's what makes it different than, let's say, pornography, right?
Well,
I kind of just said it. I'm sorry. What's the difference between art and pornography?
Yeah. So I was looking this up and trying to think about this more. And I think a lot of it is showing the context of the whole, the human person in their entirety. And the intention is to focus on the person and not a part of the person or not on the sexuality of the person. And the role of art differs from pornography because the intention of pornography is to incite lust. Mm-hmm. But the intention of art is to show the full person. And of course, art can be pornographic if done incorrectly, if represented just a part of the person or just the sexuality of the person. Because you do see some figurative art today in secular circles that might be deemed pornographic. But I think it's very clear when we see it. Sometimes maybe our vision is clouded if we're not used to seeing nudity in art. But I think it is something that is usually pretty clear to us. If we see the creation of Adam, you know, versus something else that's focusing on the sexuality of a man or woman, I think usually it comes very clearly the difference.
That's true. I never thought about that. It's like an innate, even in the secular world, like people would be able to tell the difference between the Sistine Chapel or the David or even more contemporary stuff. That is because, I mean, y'all based y'all's training off of nude models, correct?
Yeah. So that's another thing I wanted to talk about is nudity in art. The purpose of it, and also just the training, the studying of the body. So if you're going to convey something, you need to convey it well. And to do so, you need to understand it. And so that's why it's necessary, if you're going to paint figurative art or sculpt, to understand it well. So there does need to be the studying of anatomy. And I would say that's why it is so important for sacred artists to be at the same time studying theology of the body, to get in a good place where you can really uphold the dignity of the model that you're studying. And before you draw, every time, to kind of get in a place where you're seeing them how God created them. And I think it's naive to say that that isn't necessary, that we just automatically are there, because we do exist in a certain fallen culture where we might have gotten very unused to being able to see the body and not see the full person or not see the dignity as God created them to be seen with. So for me, there was like some time to kind of train myself to get in a place where I was able to be comfortable and to also like marvel at the beauty of God's creation and to recognize that how good the body is. And also to see the person in front of you, to get to know the model, to show respect for them, to have a good environment where they are as comfortable as they can be. But I think in figurative art, it is necessary to be able to study the anatomy, to understand how all the parts relate and work together, to be able to create the most beautiful art that you can.
Wasn't there something with the artists, like one of them or a couple of them mentioned that the sacred art school in Florence was different for them?
Yeah, they did, because these are artists who have made models who have made a career out of posing in different schools and ateliers in Florence. There's many different schools, and they said they definitely felt more respected and seen at the Sacred Art School and others. And I think our students would talk to them more on breaks, get to know them. And there wasn't this kind of like separation.
Yeah, it's the theology of body, not just living out in the art or in the book, but in the day-to-day life, right? It's right. Someone might feel used, right? The opposite of love is not hate, it's use in the theology of the body. And so this model is not just there to be used so you can further your expertise and, you know, get really famous. They're a person, you know? So that's really cool. That blew me away. That was someone's experience. So that was really cool. Now as a Catholic and as Catholics, we understand there's different like levels of vocation, right? There's little V vocations, there's big V vocations, there's different times in life. God calls us to different things. And you know, we do have an understanding of vocation and women, especially I'm thinking of Mulieris Dignitatem by John Paul II, in which he marvels at the feminine genius and the ability of women to do great things and to be great artists and be great, you know, business people and stuff like that, without rejecting their motherhood, without rejecting like the core of who they are. And I just thought of you, like someone who's got a really great talent and career. Like, how do you, on the vocation side, how do you find that balance? Like, where are you? Like, what advice would you give to people out there who are maybe listening, like struggling with that balance?
It was interesting, definitely, to have kind of started working on commission and have kind of started a career, and then to enter into the vocation of motherhood and to see how those two would work together. It's definitely a big challenge. I would say being married, it just reveals even more the beauty of having a helpmate. In Genesis, it talks about, you know, God created Eve as Adam's helpmate, but Adam's also Eve's helpmate. And I think in marriage, it's a partnership. So it's give and take. But
like he mixes your paints for you, you know.
He actually does. He does so much to keep things balanced in our house.
And he being Manny.
Manny. So my husband, Manny. But so right now during the toddler years, it's harder to get work done during the day. Harder than when August was an infant. August is my son. He's almost two. So when August was first born, like the first 4 months, I would just put him in a wrap. And when he would nap, I would use that time to paint. And then as he got older, things kind of shifted. So actually COVID has been pretty good for getting more work done because Manny's been working from home and mm-hmm. He'll usually watch August during his lunch break, take him outside, and then we might eat together, but I have some of that time to work. And then he's finished or home like sooner, watches him for 2 hours. And then throughout the day in between, feeding August or, settling him to sleep, or I'm still nursing him too, I try to like squeeze in as much work as I can, but it's just much harder with a toddler. So it's been good that, Manny is like very giving. And he's very much like on board that this is a like certain kind of vocation as a sacred artist that we've taken on as a family. And so, we definitely like split time, like our work time. And he helps a lot with that. And then he helps a lot with household chores too. So it's a big balance.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's awesome. You have each other. St. Francisville, is there some kind of thing where everyone takes a pact to name their kid August?
No.
It's like, is there a battle between the Pieras and the Fossiers?
No, there's no battle.
Who got
there's
it
no
first?
Battle.
Who named it first?
Well, we named August first, but actually when I was pregnant, Emily, she asked me like, what names were we thinking about? And I told her, she said, oh my gosh, we love that name. She was pregnant with Willa, but hadn't like announced it yet. they didn't know if it was a girl or boy. So she told me at that time, like, we really love that name too. We would probably name our son Augustine and call him August. She, of course, is very into French culture. And so she was familiar with the name August probably also through that. And our son is, that's where we got his name, is reading through an art book. And it was a French artist named August. It's spelled with an E. My husband has like some French heritage, so we chose to keep that spelling. And it is also in reference to St. Augustine, because my brother, Philip, his patron saint is Augustine, and he's August's godfather. So we liked that it like referenced St. Augustine, but we really liked the name August.
Are you both, because they're like no Augie at all.
Yeah, we're the same. We're the same. And of course, like no Gus, because that's just doesn't sound
well. The first is will allow Gus. I'm
really,
I call him Lil Wayne because, of course, because August means the best.
Yeah.
And so it reminded me of the great one who was Wayne Gretzky, which reminded me of a Lil Wayne rapper. So I almost baptized him Lil Wayne, but I decided not to.
Almost held back. So yeah. We try to give our children these beautiful names, and then you just can't help the nicknames that roll in.
I know, exactly. Well, Emily is pretty hardcore about it. Like if you try, she'll whip you into shape. Okay. Hey, real quick, some rapid fire before we end. Rapid fire questions. A favorite artist.
So I have too many to name, but I really love the Pre-Raphaelites. Probably Waterhouse out of those is my favorite. He only has done a few sacred pieces. And then I kind of like a lot of the Eastern, they're called like wanderer painters. So that would be Repin is one of those. But a lot of them kind of mix Eastern iconography with like this kind of mystical, more realistic style. So I tend to like them.
Okay. Who's your favorite Ninja Turtle?
I didn't watch Ninja Turtles growing up because didn't have TV.
They were
TV.
All artists. Donatello.
I know.
Raphael.
Michelangelo.
So Michelangelo is your favorite Ninja Turtle?
Just because of the artist.
But. Okay. That's what I was really asking.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your favorite church in the entire world?
I think my favorite church I've been in was when I was studying abroad with Franciscan. We went to Poland, it was the Basilica of St. Francis in Krakow. It's done in kind of an Art Nouveau style, so it has tons of patterning and bright colors and this beautiful stained glass, and it all comes together in this really beautiful whole, but people can look it up to get a better idea because it's really one of a kind.
I think one of my favorites is the Basilica in Washington, D.C. So I like mosaics, but also in St. Louis. St. Louis got a great, fantastic cathedral. Have you ever been there?
What's the name of it? No, I haven't.
St. Louis Cathedral. It's not our St. Obviously it's a different, but it's St. Louis. Yeah. And it's Byzantine as well. I gravitate in church architecture and art, more to a Byzantine iconographic style, rather than like a French, romantic style. Because I like the, similarly to church music, right? I like church music to be chant a little more distinctive, a little more set apart. But there's place for both. So,
yeah, I think the Byzantine definitely inspires like a greater sense of otherness or otherworldliness. And so there's definitely a draw there. I think every artist has to be drawn to it. And I kind of am interested in studying more of the Eastern style and kind of merging the two.
Absolutely. I could see you, being really Eastern spirituality, like, you know, mystical. You're very mystical. Okay, just yes or no, no explanation. Okay. Laughing Jesus painting.
No.
No explanation. Okay. Yeah. Yes or no, this Mother Teresa on my wall.
Oh, why are you doing this? Well, I can't see I can't see that well, but it looks like a nice drawing.
It is a nice drawing. I don't know why I'm doing this to you. Okay. Well, let's finish it like this. How can, I just want to thank you first. I want to thank you for your vocation of as a wife, a mother, and your feminine genius, and you're living that out beautifully. Two, your vocation as a sacred artist and someone who intentionally went out of their way, not just to have opinions about sacred art, not just to have ideas and but study theology of the body, study sacred art, learn how to paint so that you can serve the church. Like, and we have that in Louisiana. Well, actually, no, you're not in Louisiana.
But I'm coming back.
Yay!
Yeah.
That's right. Everything comes back to Louisiana.
We can't stay away.
Exactly. So I just want to thank you that, like, we're killing it down here in Louisiana. We got sacred artists coming out of everywhere. great families. How can people see your art and check you out and commission you and buy like $1 million painting from you? give them $1 million.
So they can go to my website, which is blairbarlowart.com. And I have a contact form.
You got contact form, you got a portfolio, you got examples of your work.
Yes, so I can see my stuff. They can also follow me on Instagram at Blair Barlow Art. Keep up to date with what I'm doing.
I love that. I wonder if Michelangelo would have had an Instagram.
Probably not. Probably not.
Yeah, probably.
And he didn't. Yeah, he kept his sketchbooks pretty under lock and key, and his projects, he was pretty secretive when he was working. You know that story where he threw something down at the, I think it was that Pope Sixtus? No, Julius, who was coming in while he was working on the Sistine Chapel, and he didn't want anyone to see.
I think
so. Probably no Instagram.
Last question. What are churches in Louisiana where you can go see your work?
So there is one in St. Francisville that has Our Lady of Mount Carmel, and there is the church hall in Vashtery. And I'm trying to think those might be the only two in Louisiana so far. There's some in the works.
Oh, really?
And
I heard you are actually personally renovating the apse of St. Louis Cathedral.
I don't know. There's lots of rumors swirling around.
You didn't know this? Oh, okay. No. I'm glad I could tell you. Don't mess it up. No pressure.
Yeah.
Seventh Crusade in St. Louis. Can't wait till you get back into town, into Louisiana.
I know. Can't wait to beautify some more churches down there.
Heck yeah. Renovate. Make it back for beauty. Okay. God bless you, Blair, and have a good night.
Thank you. You too.